Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the STEM Powered Women Podcast. I'm your host, Brittany A.J. Maricki, the founder of Sisters in STEM. If you're new to our audience and don't really know who we are, Sisters in STEM is a multimedia platform aimed toward empowering women of color in their daily lives and their passion for science, technology, engineering, and math. I created this podcast to showcase empowered women, STEM-powered women. Today in our guest chair, we have Dr. Hadiya Nicole Green. And if you haven't already heard about her, you will soon, because she is on track to change the world with her research. Using lasers and nanotechnology, she has found a way to target and kill cancer cells in mice. She founded the Aura Lee Cancer Research Foundation to expand upon her work and ultimately change the way cancer is treated. In 2016, she was listed by Ebony Magazine as one of the 100 most influential African Americans. In 2018, BET honored her as the Breast Cancer Advocate of the Year. And just last year, she was noted by Business Insider as one of the top 30 under 40 in healthcare. The list goes on and on, folks. I want you to hear all about her work, so let's get to it. Say hey, sis.
Hey, Trish.
Hi. Brittany,
I am so excited to be here with you and so proud of the work you're doing to raise awareness and advocate for Sisters in STEM.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so proud of you and all the work that you do. It's literally amazing. And you are on track to change the world, just like I said.
Thank you so much. This is definitely a faith walk and a divine assignment. So I'm just, my steps are ordered. And yes. I'm just taking one step at a time, making it happen.
Yes, I am. God is leading you to greatness. He is definitely leading you to greatness. I want everyone to learn a little bit more about who you are and what you do. So let's start with what your journey has been to get you to this point. And then we'll talk more about what it is that you are doing on a day-to-day.
Okay, awesome. So my backstory, my aunt and uncle, Aura Lee Smith and General Lee Smith, raised me and my brothers from when I was 4 years old. And they took us in after raising 8 children of their own. After my parents and grandparents both all passed away by the time when I was 4. So coming into their household with my brothers, even though people describe me as an orphan, I had the only time I really felt different was when I was wondering why was I the only one who didn't have biological parents raising me. And I would ask, like, why me, God? Why me? And as I got older, my brother really poured into me a lot and taught me his fourth grade homework when I was in kindergarten and gave me my love for learning. And my aunt instilled in me the old-fashioned principles of treat people how you want to be treated and pray and, you know, just go as far as I can in education and do my best with everything. So she really grounded me. And my uncle was always there to encourage me, to support and believe in me. So it wasn't that I became the first in my family as an island. I got to that point because people supported me. And there was a whole village in my community who helped raise me. So when I went to Alabama A&M University, love my HBCU.
Yeah.
I went on full academic scholarship, and the Deltas when I was in high school groomed and mentored me, and I was class president all 4 years in high school. And then when I got to Alabama A&M University, I was involved in a lot of extracurricular activities and different leadership positions. And I interned at NASA, interned at University of Rochester Institute of Optics, and I was planning this career in optical communications. And after serving as Miss Alabama A&M University, queen for a year, I was graduated with a 4.0 in physics. And then the day after graduation, my aunt announced that she had what she referred to as woman's cancer. And she said that she would rather die than experience the side effects of chemotherapy and radiation. I became her primary caregiver the last 3 months of her life. And 3 months after she passed, my uncle who raised me was diagnosed with cancer. And I was his primary caregiver as he went through chemo and radiation treatments. So I saw firsthand the horrors of cancer and the horrors of cancer care and knew there had to be a better way. And so I literally changed my life trajectory from trying to revolutionize the way we receive cable and internet, which was my original career trajectory, to dedicating my life to revolutionizing the way we treat cancer.
Wow. That is an amazing story because it's just literally how you were raised is what formed what you knew that your life's purpose would be.
Yeah, and part of it, when I was their caregiver, it was, I didn't understand why me when I was growing up, why me when I became Miss Alabama A&M. And then when this happened, and the treatment, I actually developed it when I was in graduate school at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And I ended up with 3 degrees in physics and 5 years of training at the Comprehensive Cancer Center and a year of training in the Department of Pathology at University of Alabama at Birmingham. And I developed this technology that shows complete elimination of cancer in mice after one treatment over the course of 15 days with no observable side effects using lasers and nanotechnology. And it dawned on me, why not me? Maybe this was my purpose in life. And cancer picked a battle with the wrong one. And God gave me the tools that I needed scientifically to bring a completely new approach to an old disease. And on top of that, gave me the vision to take this technology and instead of going the traditional route of starting a for-profit company, saying, let me start a nonprofit so this technology can be affordable and accessible for all, especially people who come from backgrounds like mine.
Mm-hmm. For all, especially because so many people are, they get the disease and they think that, oh, this is a death sentence to me. Like, I won't be able to survive this.
Unfortunately, and we get literally, cancer patients reaching out to us now every day asking if they can sign up because they've either been sent home and told there's nothing else we can do, or they would just rather not do chemo and radiation. Mm-hmm. And one of the facts that's so disheartening is that there are nearly 9 million people a year who die from cancer around the world every year. And that's even with the best of all of the available modern cancer therapies, alternative medicines, and all the interventions, there's still nearly 9 million people a year who are dying from cancer. And so our goal is to try to save some of those 9 million people through the work at the Aura Lee Smith Cancer Research Foundation. And so it's been a very heart-wrenching journey, but this is how I turned my tragedy into triumph, and how all of our volunteers at the Aura Lee Foundation turn our tragedy into triumph, turn our pain into purpose, and to really take hold of a problem and say, we're not like the other cancer nonprofits because we're not just raising money for the hope of a cure that we may one day find, hopefully.
Yeah,
we've already established and developed a technology that we've proven works in laboratory mice. And now we're raising awareness and raising money so that we can begin human trials with the technology. And a lot of people, when they think about like this business model, two of the top major cancer charities raise over $1 billion a year with no cure to show for it.
What?
Right. Wow. And so now, in the light of all of the things that are happening post-COVID-19 with the second global pandemic of addressing racism in America and around the world, I want to talk about a little bit about racism in healthcare, racism in science, racism in research, and how African-American sciences are underfunded by the government and these nonprofits. And I don't want to say the government, but there's data showing that 1 in 10 proposals by Black researchers received support from the National National Institute of Health, where our counterparts were funded. 1 in 6 proposals were funded for our white counterparts. So this is not my opinion. There's documented disparity, in research. And so instead of begging people to change, I started my own cancer nonprofit to say, you can see me as the scientist. We are within 12 months of beginning our first human trial once we reach our first $10 million fundraising goal.
Wow.
And I know people hear $10 million and think that's a lot of money, but really, if people who hear this donated a dollar, donated $5 or $10 a month, $25 a month is our average donation. Having millions of people donate a little bit is actually more effective than trying to wait on one person to donate millions of dollars. Because those mm-hmm. people who could donate millions of dollars, they're not in my cell phone right now. So I can't call them up and say, hey. And so part of my petition as a scientist, as a tech founder of a nonprofit, is to say, let's address this disparity of racism in healthcare, of racism in research, and let's build this bridge for us to save ourselves, mm-hmm. for us to address this problem ourselves instead of waiting on someone. And part of one of the things my aunt would tell me, she was like, use the brain that the good Lord gave you. And as a scientist coming from our community, it's important that we solve problems that matter to us. And there's a lot of research going on the planet. And I commend all of those who are doing research that will one day lead to something useful. That's mm-hmm. important too. But for me, my motivation was to start with what problem can I solve with what I know? What is going to have a more immediate impact for my community? So when I'm asking people to support, it's not a theory. Mm-hmm. It's evidence-based. It's been published in scientific journals. It's been peer-reviewed. I've actually gotten a grant from the government. I'm one of the few African-American scientists who has received a grant for $1 million.
Congratulations. And so,
Thank you. Shout out to the Department of Veteran Affairs. Yes. But I think it's important for African-American scientists to have a voice about how not only are we underrepresented, but the racism that we experience with funding, with opportunities, and in education. There was a report that came out from Harvard some years back about how Black scientists who get a PhD from predominantly white institutions come out with PTSD.
Mm. Really?
Yes.
I can believe it.
And this is what I'm saying about, like, because we don't talk about it, people think, oh, like, you're the poster child for success. This came with stripes, with tears. This was hard, not impossible. And I would tell myself, my ancestors picked cotton from can't see in the morning to can't see at night. My ancestors survived the transatlantic slave trade. My ancestors survived beatings and brutality that's beyond imagine. So this systemic racism that I'm dealing with, disparities, the discouragement, that's a comparison that's easy.
Yeah.
This is easy compared to that. And so that would push me to get past my hurt feelings and sometimes even what some other people might describe as brokenness, to say you can't win because my mm-hmm. ancestors prayed for me. I'm their, the answers to their prayers. I'm beyond their wildest dreams. I'm living a life that's beyond their wildest dreams. And so I stand on the broad shoulders of those who came before us. And I specifically choose to work at a historically Black college, and now I'm at a historically Black medical school on purpose because we have to support us.
Yes.
We have to support us. So I know I've been talking, but it's just, you know, I just got on my soapbox. But these are things that we really need to understand so that we can support Black charities. We mm-hmm. can support Black schools, Black hospitals, Black doctors, Black medical schools. We have to support us. And for all of our allies who may see this, it's important for you all to put your money in Black scientists, in Black charities, in Black schools, in Black hospitals. That matters too, because there yes. is so much systemic racism that happens from the entire, like, the whole process can be improved. And just like they're taking down statues and flags and changing laws, this also needs to change. Black people can't tolerate more pain than other people just because we're Black. Stop the madness. Stop. Mm-hmm. And so, like, we need to include Black people in clinical trials. We need to include Black people in the research funding. And there are some organizations people don't even realize that they identify, or their friends said, we need money. So they went in and led this big campaign and this big organization to fund just a handful of scientists that if you're not part of the inner circle, you don't even have access to. Yet yeah. The whole world thinks because celebrities endorsed it, that that's the cool end thing. And it's only in because the celebrities endorsed it. So do your research about where your money's going and make sure that if you're supporting something, that they're supporting you back. How many Black scientists do they fund? What kind of research are they funding? Does this research benefit our community? Will we see a cure from this? How many years have we been supporting these organizations without a benefit to the people who look like us? Mm-hmm. And if we haven't, we need to ask for some receipts, hold them accountable, and or stop funding them and start supporting Black charities. Specifically, I'm going to put in a plug for the Oralee. Yes, yes. And you can support us by shopping on Amazon Smile and choosing us as your cancer charity, as your charity of choice. You can donate your birthday on Facebook. You can name us in your life insurance policy and your estate plans. We can be beneficiaries. We have our 501c3 nonprofit status with the IRS, so we can accept cars and houses and anything that people want to donate to us, we can accept that. And it literally can be something as simple as a dollar. You can go to oralee.org, oralee.org, and just stand with us, even with a dollar, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you can spare. It doesn't have to be a big gesture. Just do something now while we're here and available to do this. Don't take for granted that somebody else is going to fund the research.
Mm-hmm. Because all the other researchers, they have their millionaire friends, like you said, and they can just dig in their pocket and say, here you go. But we have to rely on our family and our community. And that's the best way for us to get all of our businesses and foundations off the ground. So that way it can actually impact our community. And I commend you for everything. Like, yes, use this platform as a way to plug your project. Tell everybody where, send the money here right now. This is what you need to do.
I appreciate you getting that. And a lot of times people are saying, you know, why don't celebrities? Well, I don't know them. But if you're hearing this and you're mm-hmm. seeing this, why don't you?
Yes, because every dollar counts.
Every dollar counts. And so recently we just crossed over a major milestone that I didn't even feel like we could celebrate. We just entered into the rare space of raising $1 million through crowdfunding through my nonprofit. And because we don't want a target on our back, we're just doing a quiet thank you to everyone who's donated already, to everyone who supported us. Mm-hmm. And we know the history of Tulsa. We know the history of Rosewood. And we are very humble that we're doing this in the middle of two global pandemics when 30 million people are unemployed mm-hmm. and or who have filed for unemployment. And we're very sensitive to what's happening in the climate right now. But I also want to acknowledge that there, last I checked, there were only 32 other Black women who've ever raised $1 million or more for a company.
Wow. Wow.
And I shared this with one of my mentors at the tech incubator we're part of. And he said, I'll tell you something even more rare, Dr. Green, that there have only been 12 Black people, when you include men, who've raised $2 million or more for a company. And so we're climbing into these uncharted territories, into this rare space. But this is not just my journey. If it was, I would already raise the money if I could snap my fingers. This takes everybody who's ever lost someone to cancer, everybody who's ever thought that there should have been a cure for cancer by now, or somebody suppressing it. When BET ran the headline, "I'm our best hope for curing cancer," it was humbling. And I translated that to say, even if there were other cures, because people are so accustomed to selling out, that we may not have access to it. So me starting this nonprofit is the best chance we have at having access to something that kills cancer, so it can be available for all of us. And if you believe in affordable healthcare, if you believe in a better way to treat cancer, that there's a cure out there somewhere, support what we've already shown and demonstrated using lasers and nanotechnology to kill cancer, complete elimination of tumors in mice. And we're raising money to begin human trials. We need to reach our first $10 million fundraising goal. And then within 12 months, we can start human trials. We're not 20 years away. Research me, orly.org, Google me, Dr. Hadiyah Green, do your research, all of that, but support. One of the things, if I can share this, one of the brothers who is leading the initiative to establish a partnership with the Kappas, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, he was sharing about this work at a fraternity meeting. And somebody stood up and asked, well, you know, we want to see her research and we want to see her credentials and all that. And he was like, well, she has it, but you don't ask that from Susan G. Komen. You don't ask that from American Cancer Society. You don't ask those questions from these other. And she said, this is a quote from the white cancer nonprofits. You don't even know what their researchers look like. But go research her because she has the credentials, but don't hold her to a higher standard than you hold everybody else. And I don't mind because I know I have to be 10 times better than everybody else. I know when I come that people are going to scrutinize me. I've had a top secret security clearance before. Got almost perfect credit because I know I don't have room for error. But that's how we have to show up, like flawless and blemishless, for people to even give us a chance. And I'm saying that's cool, but still support. If you've ever donated to a cancer nonprofit, please choose the Aura Lee Smith Cancer Research Foundation as your cancer charity of choice. That's all I'm asking. However that shows up, even if it's a birthday fundraiser, and even on Amazon Smile, you don't even have to donate. Just select us, and when you shop, Amazon will donate.
Make it easy, because you know that everybody's over there ordering something off of Amazon. Yes. Let them do the donation.
right. And it's just having the unity in our community where we're getting the word out about the work that we're doing, and people with all of their skepticism, which is fine. I encourage you, research me, vet me, but also leverage that information to help me. Don't just watch and wait and pray. We need you to pray, but don't just only do that. We need you to take action and stand with me too. And when you see people who are trying to do something, support. Don't just be a bystander. Silence and not supporting, that's not how this happens. When people come together, that's how change happens. So we're on the brink of a revolution, and we need everybody to be with us.
And we want you to be the one to lead that revolution. Now, I want to take a little step back, because for people who have been fortunate enough to not experience cancer within their lifetimes or within their families, I want to compare what it is that your research is going to do versus how cancer is currently treated. Because I know that you're trying to eliminate those nasty side effects and long-lasting effects that the current treatment may have, correct?
Absolutely. So, great question. So, current cancer treatments, chemotherapy specifically, and radiation are not specific to only cancer cells. So, let's go with radiation. It's like putting you in the microwave and saying, we'll kill the cancer, but yet at the same time, they're killing a lot of other cells as well. So this radiation is burning you with radiation to kill cancer. And there are some new ways that they're doing it where they try to localize it to a region of the body so that it's not completely over your entire body. But when my uncle was going through chemo and radiation, the radiation made his skin look like it had literally been in a barbecue pit. And he looked like he had been barbecued. So chemotherapy uses chemicals that go into the body through an injection or infusion, and it circulates And the idea is that it will eliminate more cancer than healthy cells. Well, the reason why a lot of these chemotherapies have such extensive side effects is because the characteristics of cancer are shared with the characteristics of healthy cells. So healthy cells and cancer cells have similar characteristics.
So they can't tell the difference between them, really? It's going in there trying to target those cells, but it'll mistake it for a healthy cell and in the process kill those healthy cells too.
It doesn't discriminate. Chemo is not racist. It's not cellist. It's not cellularist. It doesn't discriminate. It will take out anything. And the idea is that some of the cancer cells maybe overexpress some things more than others, but the goal is to kill cancer, right? So my approach was, it don't take all that to kill cancer if you just focus on cancer. So yeah. I'm coming with a completely different scientific background. I'm not a biologist, so I didn't want to do a deep dive into the biology of cancer and cancer cells. I'm not a chemist, so I didn't want to do a deep dive into the chemistry of drugs. I'm a physicist with 3 degrees in physics. So I came with my background and expertise in lasers and nanotechnology and fiber optics, which is a different level of precision. When you have sensors and cell phones and your remote control and your TV, you're turning a channel. The radio doesn't come on when you're trying to turn on the TV or you're changing the channel. When you're calling somebody with your cell phone, even if they're in a room full of people, the person standing next to them doesn't answer your call. They answer it.
Yeah.
So if you can have this kind of precision when you're making a cell phone call, why can't you have this kind of precision when you're treating cancer? So I took inspiration from cell phones and satellites. So a satellite out of space could tell whether a dime on the ground is face up or face down. That's the kind of, I mean, this is the high tech we're using. So when I was interning at NASA, I was calibrating lasers for the International Space Station. And I'm like, satellites can do what? And this was like back when, before GPS came out, when it was still being developed. And I'm like, you know, technology is amazing. So why not use the advances that we have in the telecom world and bring that over to treating cancer, which, if I can speak frankly, feels to me, who has been a caregiver to someone who watched both parents die from cancer, to me, cancer treatments that are currently available feel barbaric, especially when we look at many computers on our cell phones that can keep the whole world connected while we're on COVID-19 pandemic one.
Yeah.
And lockdown and away from everyone, where we're having the spontaneity of movements happening all over the place with our cell phones, right? We have a whole video studio, recording studio, games, and FaceTime, and all of this technology where you have these microcomputers, you can edit movies and you know, do all kinds of amazing things at the tip of your finger. So taking that kind of technology and bringing it over to cancer as a physicist was more natural to me instead of using. So back to your original question, the reason why the treatments are different is because the whole approach is different. So using lasers is a completely different approach than using a chemical that's going to flow through the body or radiation that's like a spotlight. So imagine a laser pointer in comparison to these other two. So that's where we start with the, not even here, but like the tip of my fingertip. That's the area that we're pinpointing now. And we can tune the size of it so it's a little smaller or larger to personalize it to the size of the tumor we're treating. So we're using this laser pointer. I know it's rude to point, but we're using this laser pointer that's on average the size of my fingertip. And we're using that to shine into the tumor. But what's making it work is not the laser by itself, which is harmless by design to minimize side effects. And we are activating these little tiny particles that I developed And I made a new protocol for making my nanoparticles more uniform in shape and size so they perform specifically to the laser that I'm using to activate them, not regular sunlight or other types of light, just specifically to this laser pointer size laser. So these nanoparticles, we're only going to inject them at the site of the tumor. And even if you put them in other places, when you shine the laser on the tumor, it's only going to activate the nanoparticles in the tumor, because the nanoparticles, before you activate them, are harmless. So you have harmless nanotechnology and a harmless laser that by themselves aren't going to kill anything. So you have to be wrong twice in order to kill something that you're not targeting.
Okay.
So by shining the laser at the site of the tumor where the nanoparticles are injected, we kill just what we're targeting and not all the rest of the person. We're not causing any harm anywhere else. And this is the beauty of why there aren't any observed side effects in the technology. It's by design. It's not on accident, because I saw what the other models were. And I'm like, there has to be something better. If we're using precision, we can activate this the same way you activate a sensor or you activate your cell phone to make a call. It's that kind of one-to-one. And for all the STEM sisters out here, it's the plasmon resonance absorption of the nanoparticles that's allowing the electrons to oscillate so rapidly that they heat up. Mm-hmm. And we're providing a thermal ablation for killing cancer. And it's different from other thermal ablations because it's on the nanometer level with precision and accuracy.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so it's a completely new approach to treat a tumor at the site of the tumor. And there have been people since I started in this area who are now also doing that. And there are some people who want to hold on to the old school of thought that systemic treatment is just as effective as local treatment. But when, you know, I'm coming from the perspective of a caregiver, before I was a scientist, before I was Dr. Green, that's what pulls at my heartstring to make sure this is something that's patient-centered, not economically centered.
Mm-hmm. Because that was actually going to be the question I'm posing, is that if they're taking that systemic approach where they're, you know, trying to kill the cancer in one area by treating the entire body, then it's going to lead to a sickness in another area. But then that could also, you know, you pay money for this, you pay money for that, and then it's ends up becoming a business, which it is. It's literally a business.
And part of what I'm careful about, because I'm not trying to wage a war with the pharmaceutical industry at all.
Okay.
There are a lot of early cancers, early stage cancers, that with early detection can save lives. So if you get diagnosed with stage one, stage two breast prostate cancer, you have like a 95% chance of surviving using currently available chemotherapy and radiation interventions.
Okay.
The challenge is most Black people don't go to the doctor like we're supposed to. So by the time we get diagnosed with cancer, it's stage four.
Yep, that's very true. Yeah.
Yep. Right. And so these are not my words, but in the scientific literature, there's documentation that stage four cancer that chemotherapy and radiation is about 85 to 95% ineffective against stage four cancer. So this is why this is specifically a passion of mine, because there's this gap. So when people are like, oh, the pharmaceutical company is not going to like you, I'm not competing with them. Because their treatments don't work for the kind of cancer patients I'm targeting, for the types of cancer I want to go after. So I'm specifically looking to have these late stage advanced chemo resistant, inoperable late stage cancers, because that's where chemotherapy and radiation, and even frankly speaking, these alternative medicines are just not effective. And that's not a slight. These are documented facts. And part of that, the next step in that is that as a result, there are nearly 9 million people a year who die from cancer. They're not dying from stage one, stage two cancers. They're dying from stage four cancers that are chemo resistant, inoperable, that, you know, they don't have any other treatment options. And so using this information to help save lives, go get your screenings. And when they say, oh, you know, the recommended age is 50 or 60, if you are a Black woman, a Black man, and you have any history of cancer in your family, you need to start advocating to get tested and screened for cancers in your 30s. Okay. I get so many cancer patients in their 30s who have advanced aggressive breast cancer or who have some kind of brain tumor. So please, if something feels off, go get checked. Get your annual exams. Eat right. Exercise. Pray. Meditate. Keep your stress low. Take control of your health. Don't be the victim. Genetic cancers only account for about 15%. That's stuff you really can't help. Everybody else can help prevent cancer with your lifestyle choices. So make sure you eliminate as much junk food, eliminate pork and all that red meat and things that you know aren't good for you, and desserts and sugar cookies and all of that stuff. Find the healthiest alternatives. Eat your fruit for sweets. Eat your vegetables. Drink water. Put lemon in it. I personally do eat right for my blood type. I'm not giving anybody any medical advice or telling anybody anything, but use your common sense about making healthy choices about what you eat so that your body has what it needs. I take vitamin C and vitamin D and a daily multivitamin to keep my immune system strong.
Yeah.
And these are things that we can do to take care of ourselves, but it's so important for us not to only feel like we have no control, even when the system is not always. Like, try to find a doctor who cares about you. And make sure that you're writing your questions down before you go into the clinic, so that you can make sure all your questions are being answered and that you understand what's happening to you.
Yeah.
So stay informed and stay on top. I know that was a soapbox from what you said, but it just breaks my heart that people feel like they can't do anything about being healthy when some of the simplest steps are just changing your diet, changing your exercise routine, drinking more water, less other type of beverages. And I don't want to get into any fights with any, you know, other industries. That's not what I'm about. I just want people to live and to live healthy and to be strong in mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah. And like you pointed out, you're a physicist, so you're taking a completely different approach to this cure. And do you have to work closely with oncologists who have been, you know, trained in the area of cancer, and that's been their research true and true?
So, very good question. So, I collaborate. That's a key term. Okay. So I collaborate with oncologists and surgeons at my HBCU medical school where I work for my day job. I'm in the Department of Surgery. And around the country, I have collaborators who specialize in a variety of different cancers who have not just agreed to host my clinical trials, but they are excited about the technology. And they all acknowledge that their patients need this technology now. And so they're all on board to host clinical trials in a variety of cancers, including breast, prostate, colorectal, anal, cervical, skin, head and neck, brain, lung, cervical, and ovarian cancers. This, you know, as I say, from the rooter to the tutor. So there's a lot to, there's even other areas, and maybe just because I don't have those collaborators, and people constantly introducing me to people on that side. But until we raise the money to begin human trials number one, that expanding it broader isn't moving it forward. Those are two different objectives. And so even though we're moving everything forward, for me, the focus is on let's begin the clinical trial, the first one. And then we can expand into other indications. But to answer your specific question, I do collaborate with surgeons and oncologists because they will be the people who will actually administer the clinical trial. I'll just be an advisor and a collaborator to facilitate their training, but I do not see patients.
Okay, I see what you mean. So you're creating the overall technology that they would use, and then they would be the people actually administering that to the patients that get into Absolutely. Your human trials.
Absolutely. So let me give you this example. Because I'm a physicist, most people don't know what physicists do. So famous physicists have created the X-ray machine. It was actually a woman, Madame Curie, created the X-ray that we use mm-hmm. at the hospital. The MRI, the CAT scan, those were also created by physicists. So physicists create the instruments that we use in the hospitals, right? But they're not the people who administer them, right? Okay. And so sometimes people don't understand the difference between a PhD research scientist and inventor and a medical doctor who sees patients and administers medicine and facilitates instrumentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I didn't even make that connection the way you pointed it out. The fact that the X-ray was created by a physicist. When I think physics, I think back to my physics 201 course and learning about drawing free body diagrams and which way that the force is putting, and then the quantum mechanics and all of these different things. That's what I think of when I think physics. But now that you're showing how it can be applied in healthcare, that's a completely different approach to the field.
Absolutely. And this is literally applied physics, because mm-hmm. for me, the abstract physics didn't appeal to me, because I'm like, what are we going to do with that? What's the practical applied purpose for this? Like, how is this useful? And that was always my question at the beginning of every physics class. And I know I drove my physics professors crazy with that. Like, okay, what can we do with this? Because that I had to anchor it in something useful. Like, why am I studying thermodynamics? Oh, okay. Why am I studying classical mechanics? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Quantum mechanics? Okay, okay. So it gave me an anchor to fall in love with the subject, as opposed to just studying, you know, theoretical concepts and equations. It made it make sense to me to know how can this be used. So mm-hmm. I've always loved applied physics. And I'm like, oh, this is what happened in order for us to get electricity, in order for the doors to open without us touching them, in order for us to get cell phones.
Yeah.
Oh, how we got our X-ray machine and the MRI and the CAT scan. Oh, okay. This is how we're able to scan fingerprints to open our new phones or our face recognition on our phones. Like, okay, physics is driving all of this technology and people don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. So...
And you mentioned it a couple of times, the fact that you are a professor at an HBCU in the field of surgery. It's Morehouse College, correct?
It's Morehouse School of Medicine, but I'm not authorized to speak on behalf of the institution, so I represent myself when I'm doing interviews and gotcha. My nonprofit. Yes. Okay. And so, yes.
I understand. I just was letting people know where if they were like, oh, I want to make sure I get into her class. The people who were actually, there at the school.
Yeah. So actually, I have a research lab at Morehouse School of Medicine. So I train students in my lab, and that's my day job. So okay. I don't actually teach courses right now, because okay. I'm focused on building my research program and focused mm-hmm. on getting these clinical trials. And excuse me, most of my salary comes from grant funding, so I bought my time.
Yes, because it's nonprofits, they are a business, but it's not always the profit that's going to help sustain you in your, you know, your daily life. So that's why you said you have to have that day job.
Yeah, and for me, and this is something that people should know, I don't take a salary from my nonprofit. I treat it like a tech startup where I'm putting money in. So when I do speaking engagements, I actually have them make my honorarium payable to the foundation. And I put in my own day job salary into the foundation to cover operational expenses so that mm-hmm. all of the donations can go towards the purpose and why we're raising money. So mm-hmm. it's a completely interesting scenario, but a lot of professors have startup companies on the side. Mine just happens to be a nonprofit. It's uh-huh. a tech-based nonprofit, but it's a nonprofit. So this is my volunteer work.
Nice. I understand it completely because I have my day job and then everything I do for Sisters in STEM, any cost that is associated with it, it's just coming out of my pocket. Like, no one's funding this. It's me. So I completely know what you mean.
You completely understand. And yeah. It's the labor of love. It mm-hmm. really is.
Yeah. When you know that it's something that's needed, then you know that I'm going to give it my all. I'm going to put everything that I can into it. What advice do you have for people who are looking to get into research and follow a path similar to yours?
So my advice about getting into research is a little different from following a path that's similar to mine, because I would say follow the path that God leads you to follow, because it may not be like mine. And I think that everybody has a divine purpose for being on the planet. So if you can channel your pain or your purpose or the things that tug at your heart, the things that make you cry, the things that make you angry, the things that inspire you, that uplift you, follow your heart to find your path. And for me, that how do you go into research or anything else that you might be interested in is always be excellent every day with every task. And as you're putting your best into everything that you do, when opportunities come, you'll be qualified and you'll be ready, right? And so who knew certain things that I learned 20 years ago when I was class president in high school all 4 years, that I channeled that when I was president of different organizations when I was in college, and channeled that when I was Miss Alabama A&M University, and now channel that as the founder of a cancer nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So be excellent in everything that you're doing. And if you don't have your own purpose and your own passion, it's okay not to reinvent the wheel and to support something that you can believe in and you can stand behind or stand with, and put your all into that. And then mm-hmm. maybe while you're doing that, you may find something that inspires you to branch off and do your own thing. But that spirit of excellence is so important. And for me, I'll say, don't chase money. Chase purpose, chase happiness, chase service, like be of service, but don't chase money. You're not happy. Like, money doesn't make people happy, but helping people does.
Yes, I completely agree. That is beautiful advice. And I hope that all the sisters who are looking to get into research and follow a field that will fuel their passion, I hope that her advice will help you along the way. I appreciate you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Brittany. It's been a pleasure. Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Yes.
I'm proud of you and all your work. And I had come across your information a couple years ago when I was going to host an event, and I put together this collage of Black women in STEM who did things in the past and people who are doing things today. And I found my board. It's my board. All the listeners, you guys can't see it, but if you're watching the video, and she's right over here.
There I am. Yes. I remember when this came out, I was like, oh, that is so nice. You did a great job. That Thank was you. So nice. Thank you so much for including me. That was awesome.
You have so much greatness in store. So you were definitely worthy of being on there with all the amazing Black women who have founded things and just been making so much strides in the field of science, technology, engineering, and medicine. Math.
We can put medicine in there too, as a double M, and medicine and math.
There we go.
So I want to say thank you so much again, and just encourage everyone who's watching and everyone who's listening who can't see to please follow me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at Dr. Hadiyah Green, as DRHADIYAH Green, like the color, and follow the foundation at We Are Orally. That's WEAREORALEE. We would love to have you as part of our family. Look us up and learn more about what we're doing at orally.org. You can donate there, or you can just follow us, even that simple. But I really appreciate this opportunity, Brittany. You've been to do it.
Yes. It was a pleasure. And you guys, donate, donate, donate. She needs your help. Our community needs her help. So we got to support her.
Thank you
so much, you guys. This has been another episode of the STEM Power Women Podcast. Make sure you follow us at The Sisters in STEM on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever your heart desires. And you can find me, Brittany A. Joy, on Instagram. Make sure you are always staying empowered. You are STEM powered. You've got this, sis. I'll see you on the next one. Bye.